Well, as we have here in your notes, and I hope everybody got a copy of the handout here, basically what I've done is I've pulled several quotations from the Bettner book. So we're going to simply read through the quotations here from Bettner, because he has such great wisdom and insight here. And then we're just going to kind of basically talk about the quotations that we're looking through and see what he's saying here. So to start off here, we're talking about, again, the objections to the doctrine of predestination. And we're asking, is predestination fatalism? So Bettner begins with the first quotation there in your notes. And Bettner states, "Much misunderstanding arises through confusing the Christian doctrine of predestination with the heathen doctrine of fatalism." Bettner does not mince words there, once again. The heathen doctrine of fatalism. There is, in reality, only one point of agreement between the two, which is that both assume the absolute certainty of all future events. The essential difference between them is that fatalism has no place for a personal God. Predestination holds that events come to pass because an infinitely wise, powerful, and holy God has so appointed them. Fatalism holds or teaches that all events come to pass through the working of a blind, unintelligent, impersonal, non-moral force which cannot be distinguished from physical necessity and which carries us helplessly within its grasp as a mighty river carries a piece of wood. So again, they're opening. Bettner is essentially contrasting the doctrine of predestination with the philosophy of fatalism. So, for those who maybe aren't familiar with fatalism, we've probably heard that term, fatalism, fate, things like that, that people often ascribe events to that happen in life. You know, say that's fate. Sometimes even they'll talk about things, that was good luck or bad luck, things like that that happen in their lives. So a definition that's in your notes here of fatalism, a real simple definition, is that fatalism is the belief that all events are predetermined and therefore inevitable. Now, interestingly enough, I think we might could even use that definition, or at least part of that definition, for explaining the doctrine of predestination as well, in that, as Bettner notes, they are in agreement in that both assume the certainty of all future events. So when we talk about predestination, we say we would explain to someone at some point in that explanation that God is the one who predetermines all future events. Those are certain, right? We've talked about over and over again that God is immutable or he's unchangeable and his decrees are unchangeable. They are assuming these certain events. Well, that's what fatalism teaches as well, that future events are unchangeable and they're predetermined and you can't do anything about it. However, according to fatalism, who is it that determines all future events? Of course, this is where we see the big distinction between predestination and fatalism. So, according to fatalism, who determines all events? Well, it is an unknown, impersonal force. If God exists, little g God here, to the fatalist, if God exists, then he is most certainly not the true God of the scriptures, and we're going to see why that is in just a moment. So now, again, let's compare fatalism with the teaching of the scriptures, which is predestination. Again, let's look at the next quotation from Bettner here in your notes. Predestination teaches that from eternity, God has had one unified plan or purpose, which he's bringing to perfection through this world order of events. Predestination holds that all of his decrees are rational determinations founded on sufficient reason, and that he has fixed one great goal toward which the whole creation moves. Predestination holds that the ends designed in this plan are first, the glory of God, and second, the good of his people. On the other hand, fatalism excludes the idea of final causes. Fatalism snatches the reins of universal empire from the hands of infinite wisdom and love and gives them into the hands of a blind necessity. Fatalism attributes the course of nature and the experiences of mankind to an unknown, irresistible force against which it is vain to struggle and childish to repine. So here in this quotation from Bettner, we see summed up that the difference between fatalism and predestination is in the nature and the purpose of God and man. So fatalism, again, teaches that God, if he even exists, does all things arbitrarily or randomly. and without purpose or without regard to those he controls. So according to fatalism, everything happens really just because. I mean, that's all you can explain it away to. Why does that happen? Just because. Just because that's the way things are going to happen. So fatalism states if there's a God acting behind everything, there's no compassion, there's no love in his motive. Again, it's just arbitrary rule. Now, again, compare this with the teachings of Calvinism. Compare this with what the scriptures tell us. And the scriptures, of course, teach us that God is personal, that he rules and governs all things for his glory and out of love for his elect. And God works all things for the good of the elect, and that even the reprobate have purpose in glorifying God. But the God of Calvinism is one who loves and decrees and brings all things to pass by his sovereign power. And this is most certainly not fate. So let's look now at our confession. Let's look at our standards and look at some more explanations, some more definitions. We've reviewed chapter 3 on God's eternal decree several months ago. We discussed it, but we'll review it here now and look at it again. So the Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 3, we're going to look at section 1. And could I ask you to read that for us, Nick?
Yes.
Please.
God from all eternity did by the most wise and holy counsel of his own will freely and unchangeably ordain whatsoever comes to pass. Yet so, as thereby neither is God the author of sin, nor is violence offered to the will of the creatures, nor is the liberty or contingency of second causes taken away, but rather established.
Thank you, Dick. So the first part we see of the Confession 3, section 1, says that God from all eternity did by the most wise and holy counsel of his will freely and unchangeably ordain whatsoever comes to pass. So we note here that the world is not governed by fate, but rather all things come to pass by God's decrees. We also note that if God is bringing all things to pass, that then there are some implications for this. And that's what the next part of our confession is telling us. Maybe not necessarily implications, but rather what we are not implying by saying God decrees all things. God is the one who brings all things to pass. And what so people hear that and they say, okay, if God brings all things to pass, then what about, and the confession says, oh, hold on, that we're not implying, we're not stating that God is the author of sin. We're not saying that there is any violence offered to the will of the creatures. And we're not saying the liberty or contingency of second causes is taken away. We're not saying that. We're going to look at all that in just a moment further. Next, our testimony here. Very short, succinct, excellent summary just puts it forth plainly. The RP testimony, same section, chapter 3, section 1, says, we reject any teaching which asserts that God has not planned all that comes to pass. So right here, the RP testimony pretty plainly says that the philosophy of fatalism is to be rejected. Why? Because fatalism asserts God has not planned all that comes to pass. And we reject that teaching because fatalism asserts it all comes to pass by a blind, unintelligent, impersonal, non-moral force. Again, completely contrary to what the scriptures tell us. So then lastly here, let's look at our shorter catechism, question 7. And I bet all the children probably could answer this for us. Question 7 of the shorter catechism asks, what are the decrees of God? Of course, the answer is, the decrees of God are his eternal purpose according to the counsel of his will, whereby for his own glory he hath foreordained whatsoever comes to pass. So everything that has ever come to pass or will ever come to pass comes about by the will of God. We note the decrees of God are personal because why? Because God is personal. And again, contrast this with fatalism, which says fatalism is an impersonal force behind everything. We also note that God's decrees have purpose behind them, and that why does God decree everything that he does? Well, what's the purpose behind that? Well, it's for his glory, is the simple answer. And again, fatalism states that everything happens just arbitrarily or randomly. There's no purpose behind that. So moving on, looking at the next quotation from Bettner here in your notes. Bettner states, according to the doctrine of predestination, the freedom and responsibility of man are fully preserved. In the midst of certainty, God has ordained human liberty. But fatalism allows no power of choice, no self-determination. It makes the acts of man to be as utterly beyond his control as are the laws of nature. Fatalism, with its idea of irresistible, impersonal, abstract power, has no room for moral ideas, while predestination makes these the rule of action for God and man. Fatalism has no place for and offers no incentives to religion, love, mercy, holiness, justice, or wisdom, while predestination gives these the strongest conceivable basis. And lastly, fatalism leads to skepticism and despair, while predestination sets forth the glories of God and of his kingdom in all their splendor and gives an assurance which nothing can shake. So, according to predestination, the freedom and responsibility of man are fully preserved. Calvinism teaches that man is responsible for his actions. So we don't believe that, again, we're not saying that things just happen and that we have no control over that or no say over that and that we're somehow freed from our responsibility to these things because God is just controlling our lives and we don't have any responsibility. That's not at all what we teach. It's not what the scriptures teach, what Calvinism teaches. Instead, man is responsible for his actions. He must obey God's law. He must respond to the word. He must believe on Christ to be saved. After he is regenerate and has faith, he must produce fruit, as we heard this morning. And regarding man's responsibility, fatalism would teach that what will be, will be. So, therefore, fatalism says just do whatever you want to do because it's all determined anyway. You can't change anything. You can't change the future at all. So just do whatever you're going to do because that was already planned out and there's nothing you can do otherwise. But as Bettner states, fatalism with its idea of irresistible, impersonal abstract power has no room for moral ideas. So fatalism will always be antinomian as well. Finally, as Bettner states, fatalism has no place for and offers no incentives to religion, love, mercy, holiness, justice, or wisdom. So an example is, why help the poor and needy? Well, fatalism would say that the poor and needy are either destined to be poor, and nothing will change that, or they're destined to have things turn around for them, and so either way, nothing you can do is going to affect that eventual outcome. However, according to the scriptures, why should we help the poor and needy? Well, first of all, because God commands us to. But then second, we know that God can and God will use our actions as a means to bring about his will. Next, we see a quote from Calvin here. Calvin says, "Fate is a term given by the Stoics to their doctrine of necessity, which they had formed out of a labyrinth of contradictory reasonings. A doctrine calculated to call God himself to order and to set him laws whereby to work. Predestination I define to be, according to the Holy Scriptures, that free and unfettered counsel of God by which he rules all mankind and all men and things and also all parts and particles of the world by his infinite wisdom and incomprehensible justice." So for Calvin, the Stoics formed this doctrine of necessity to call God to order, and the Stoics seemed to recognize that God controls things, but struggled with the why behind why he did the things he did. So they formulate the doctrine of necessity, or meaning that things all happen simply because it's necessary for them to happen. A cause and effect, if you will. But again, for the Stoics, this comes back to just simply being faith, what they subscribe to. So, back to Bettner again. Bettner says, no man can be a consistent fatalist. For to be consistent, he would have to reason something like this. And here's a really good example Bettner gives here. Listen to this. For the fatalist, they reason like this. If I'm to die today, it will do me no good to eat, for I shall die anyway. Nor do I need to eat if I'm to live many years yet, for I shall live anyway. Therefore, I will not eat. So you see the fatalist line of thinking here. Sounds very silly to anyone with a shred of common sense. But the fatalist says, what's predetermined is already predetermined. Nothing I can do can change that. If I'm going to live for years and years, it doesn't matter if I eat or not. That's what's going to happen. But if I'm determined to die, it doesn't matter if I eat or not. And so, again, just kind of some silly logic there. Benner says, needless to say, if God has foreordained that a man shall live, then God has also foreordained that that man shall be kept from the suicidal folly of refusing to eat. So, Benner here appeals to what is essentially referred to as the idle argument, and this traces back to Greek philosophy. And so, what do we know instead of this fatalistic thinking? What do we know to be true? Well, we know that if a man does not eat, he will eventually die. To not eat is to effectively commit suicide. And as Bettner states, if God has foreordained that a man shall live, he has also foreordained that he shall be kept from the suicidal folly of refusing to eat. So Bettner rightly notes that this is folly to assume man has no responsibility for his actions and that second causes are not used by God. That's what the fatalist says there. Man has no responsibility for his actions. It doesn't matter whether he eats or not. And that second causes, they're not used by God. So again, it doesn't matter if you eat or not. But we see that both of those are not true. Man has responsibility for his actions, as well as God uses those actions as a means to bring about his will. Second causes there. So again, as the confession that we read, 3:1 says, God from all eternity did by the most wise and holy counsel of his own will freely and unchangeably ordain whatsoever comes to pass. Yet so is thereby neither is God the author of sin, nor is violence offered to the will of the creatures, nor is the liberty or contingency of second causes taken away, but rather is established. So, God brings everything to pass. However, no one could ever say that God is the author of sin or that God violates the will of his creatures. I don't think this is in your notes, but also a reference to our confession in chapter 5, section 2. So listen here. Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 5, section 2 states that although in relation to the foreknowledge and decree of God, the first cause, so God is the first cause, all things come to pass immutably and infallibly. So nothing can change those, and they're always going to be perfect. Yet by the same providence, God orders them to fall out according to the nature of second causes, either necessarily, freely, or contingently. So we're going to look at all these things a bit further in the coming weeks. So if there's, we have a lot that's left unsaid here at this point on that. But that's one of the next arguments against predestination that we're going to look at, is that God is the author of sin with predestination. We're going to counter that in the next coming week. So we'll look at that some more. So finally, as we close our time here, let's look at these last two quotations from Bettner. And these are just a good summary, kind of hopefully, of what we've talked about today. So Bettner says, this doctrine of predestination is only superficially like the pagan fate. The Christian is in the hands not of a cold, immutable determinism, but of a warm, loving Heavenly Father who loved us and gave His Son to die for us on Calvary. The Christian knows that all things work together for good to them that love God, even to them that are called according to His purpose. And the Christian can trust God because he knows He is all-wise, loving, just, and holy. And God sees the end from the beginning so that there is no reason to become panicky when things seem to be going against us. So again, this is a reference to what Bettner noted previously. He said that fate leads to skepticism and despair. Because if you believe in the philosophy of fate and that everything's governed by fate and you have nothing you can do to change that and it's all random and arbitrary, certainly there would be despair behind that. Because that means that when something good or bad, or however you even perceive good or bad, happens in your life with those things, who knows why that happened to you? Who knows what's going to come next? There's nothing you can do to change those things. a lot of frustration. And you see people a lot of times in the world come up with these philosophies that I kind of feel like piggyback off of fate, off of fatalism. So there's things like one I hear so often, and I hear so many Christians even talk about this idea of karma. Maybe you've experienced that with some friends or somebody like that. Again, these are Christians, professing Christians, who talk about karma and how, you know, you do have to do good things so good things will happen to you. And so many times often professing Christians will make references to luck or to good fortune. You know, they may not call it that. But we know that young people, make sure and remember this. If anything happens in your life, whether it's something that good happens in your day or something that maybe doesn't seem as good, you know that everything that happens in your life is because for God's glory, first of all, and you know it's because He has a purpose in that for you as well. And that should give us comfort. That should give us reassurance. And as Bettner says, there's no reason to become panicky when things seem to be going against us. I like that. So the last quotation here is, Bettner says, since the universe is one systematized unit, we must choose between fatalism, which ultimately does away with mind and purpose, and the biblical doctrine of predestination, which holds that God created all things, that His providence extends to all His works, and that while free Himself, He has also provided that we shall be free within the limits of our natures. And instead of our doctrine of predestination being the same with the heathen doctrine of fatalism, it is its absolute opposite and only alternative. Very good summary there, I think, as Bender wraps it up there. So that's a section here. Hopefully at this point, with that lesson, you're clear, if anybody was still doubting or on the fence there, that we certainly do not subscribe to fatalism. And what was that summary there? Really simple, that the testimony said that we reject any teaching which asserts God has not planned all that comes to pass. That includes fate, that includes luck, that includes karma, any of those things that would fall under that umbrella there. We reject all those teachings there. And in lieu of the true scriptural comforting teaching of the doctrine of predestination. Amen.